It's early morning in Costa Rica. We're in a mixed tropical and temperate forest, where a stream runs to the Pacific. Tiny bats nestle in a tree after a night on the wing. A great kiskadee calls. And gray-capped flycatchers sally forth from willow-like shrubs to catch insects in midair. Now a dozen white ibis, large, graceful birds with curved pink bills, fly by in silent formation, low to the water. Deep in a thicket, two black-hooded ant shrikes call. It's only 8 a.m., yet the heat and humidity are rising. By noon, a few black vultures will be eating the remains of an iguana. Chestnut-mandibled toucans will shift lazily from one tree to another. We'll lie low until the sounds of cicadas give way to the sounds of crickets. In the tropics, darkness falls quickly. Tonight, however, the moon is full, and a chorus like no other begins to pour forth. The calls of Bufo marinus, marine toads. The land is pulsing with life. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. We at New Dimensions thank you for your support. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
As we age and are no longer raising young children or working for an income for 40 to 80 hours a week, we are most likely entering the third stage of life and entering elderhood. With increasing longevity, this is becoming an ever-expanding population. What does it mean to be an elder in the 21st century? Do elders have a place and purpose in society? What does it mean to be proactive in approaching aging? How can the shift from adulthood to elderhood be the most influential years? Today, we'll be exploring how to age with grace and wisdom with our guest, Diana Percy. Diana Percy is founder of the internationally acclaimed Organization Development Australia. She's past chair of the Dharma School with experience in psychology, gestalt therapy, business, leadership education, and governance, and has served as corporate advisor working with boards of directors and CEOs, as well as being a business owner herself. She's also a poet and leads pilgrimages to oceans and forests and leads a project she calls The New Elders, which centers on the positive development of elders and changing the negative community mindset. She's the author of the forthcoming book, Becoming an Elder, Practicing the Wisdom Arts, and resides in Melbourne, Australia. Join us for the next hour as we explore becoming an elder with our guest, Diana Percy. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Diana, welcome.
Thank you. It is just delightful to be here. I'm so pleased to be here.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure having you here all the way from Australia. We're catching you on your way home, I think.
Yes, that's right.
So I'd love to begin and talk about how we can face aging with one or two ways, maybe more than that, but let's talk about two ways. One is with resignation. Another is with possibilities.
Yes.
So talk about those two ways of facing aging.
Okay. Maybe we could start with also making a distinction between being an elder, becoming an elder, and becoming older, old age, because so often those two get confused or they're used synonymously, and there's confusion because of the word elderly. When you're becoming elderly, a lot of people think of old age, and that's different to the notion of becoming an elder in my mind, and of elderhood. So I spent some time thinking about that and came up with some definitions, some words around being old, old age, and an elder. And I'll just go through those first. The elderly, or being old, the elderly have their life behind them. They may not have a great deal to look forward to, nor have plans for what lies ahead. So their energy is directed more into the past and the present and away from the future. Someone elderly is more withdrawing from life, not prematurely, but at the best pace for them. And ideally, being elderly is a beautiful time of life. Elderly withdrawal, or cocooning, is a quiet state, a quiet time of life, where you're not wanting anything new, not needing anything for growth. It's just a time of appreciating in its best form, just being. And that's because the elderly are in wind down from life. So the calm and peace of old age can be like the grace of walking in this sacred grove. We can aim for calm and being the sacred warrior inhabiting the grove of our old age, something beautiful to aim for in old age. But an elder, in contrast, is still alive and full of energy, and looks forward to life and continues to grow out of the midst of whatever life has dealt them. Being an elder is really a state of mind. And an elder develops their wisdom. There's an innate knowing that wisdom is not acquisitive. It's a process, an ongoing process, and a reflection of the soul that requires rinsing clean the blood and the stains of life's woundings. So not everybody who is over a certain age becomes an elder. There's something more to it than that.
So are you saying, Diana, that you're not making a distinction that one is better than the other?
No, not at all. Not at all. I'm saying they're different phases of life, different stages that we pass through.
So the one that is more reflective and quiet, maybe one might even use the word passive, that
yes.
they're not active out in the world. That's not necessarily a bad place to be as compared to another person who is aging, who continues to be more active in the world and moving with energy and growing their awareness.
Yes.
So you're not saying one is better than the other.
No, I'm not. And I'm also saying that old age is a much older age. So in my mind, elderhood is somewhere that takes us up to, I don't know, 80s or 90s, mid-80s or 90s. And old age is when our health really does start to decline and we have those few years at the end of life that where we do need to be quiet.
Okay, and so let's talk about elderhood, then, that particular phase,
okay,
or the possibility of that phase, that you also say that we can, in those years, continue to be very influential. And we don't often think about the elders in our community as being having any sort of influence. They rather disappear in many ways.
Yes.
So what is the influence that you think that elders can have?
Well, I think that the purpose of going into any life stage is really to go to another level of consciousness. And we only really have three major life stages. Although I know Eric Erickson and Ken Wilber and Claire Graves and many other esteemed people have established many other levels to the life stage. But I like to keep it simple. And so I just look at three. So we have childhood, we have adulthood, and we have elderhood. And in between, we have extended, like, years of transition, a transition period.
So like in adulthood, what would our concerns be in adulthood?
Yes, our concerns in adulthood are quite different. They're more of the warrior or the carer. So we're interested then in earning a living, and we're interested in taking our place as caregivers.
And raising children.
Raising children. Normally we're raising children or at least looking after others who perhaps are aging or who
like
are
parents
unwell,
or, yes.
Parents or grandparents or whatever. So there's a lot of energy that goes into that. We need to be looking at our career or other ways that we're earning a living. There are many, many tasks that fill the day. When we get to elderhood, our motivation and our preferences and so on change, and we move into a different kind of phase of life. And our consciousness will change with that. So if I can just explain some of the fears that we face as an elder that start to change us, that we confront, and also some of the frontiers that we come up against. So for a start, we become more aware of our own mortality as elders, normally than we are in any other life stage. So as the people that we're close to and that are near to us start to die.
I do notice that now as I'm entered into this phase of my life,
yes.
I notice that when I look at obituaries, I look at the age, mm-hmm. You know, they list the age and what they died of, and I have a deeper curiosity because it's such an unknown, mm-hmm. And there is a wondering of how it's all going to end. So, and I know that you give advice about using that rather than fearing it, to use it as an impetus to even be more alive to your life.
Yes. Once that awareness is there, that our life is finite and it is going to end at some point, and we come to terms with that in some way, then we can use it as a motivation to really get on with what really matters in life, what is really important, and to sort out what that is, and also to make sure that we're bringing that into our life in an active way and not just thinking about it or reflecting on it, but doing it.
So when you say bringing what matters, I think you've also described in your book how that changes, like what matters to us, let's say, in adulthood might be quite different than what matters to us as an elder. And that's why we should start to really look at that again. Mm-hmm. Don't assume that the same things that matter to us maybe 20 years ago or 10 years ago are going to be the same that matters to us now.
Yes. from what I've seen working with other people and also my own experience, what starts to happen as an elder is that we become more interested in our internal life and what's happening for us internally. And so there's a shift from when we're an adult and we're in the warrior mode and we need to be very externally focused on everything. Then as an elder, there's a shift to we're more interested in meaning.
So let's talk about that in just one moment. I want to remind our listeners that I'm here with Diana Percy, and she is the author of the forthcoming book, Becoming an Elder, Practicing the Wisdom Arts, and she leads a project called The New Elders. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, DiPercy.com, Di as short for Diana, DiPercy, DiPercy.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. Here with Diana Percy, and she is the author of the forthcoming book, Becoming an Elder, Practicing the Wisdom Arts. And she also leads a project in Melbourne, Australia, called The New Elders. And we were just talking about meaning and how, Diana, how meaning changes in our life. And here we are, as if we're are entering eldership, it might be different than what it was as an adult. So is there more that you'd like to share with us about that?
Lawrence Vanderpost, who did a lot of work with the Kalahari Bushmen, and he said that they talk about meaning in an interesting way. They talk about having two kinds of hunger. One is the physical hunger that everybody experiences. And the other is what they call a grand hunger. And that grand hunger is for meaning. And when you have meaning in your life, you belong. You know who you are and you belong. You then have purpose. And this becomes so much more important as we age, as we start to become an elder. And I think the purpose that we have as adults and as children, we still have purpose there, but it's different. It's a different kind of purpose. Our goals are different.
I believe that Sir Lawrence really made the analogy that purpose and meaning is actually more important than happiness, the pursuit of happiness.
Yes.
That it actually deepens us and is much more satisfying than that going for that temporary happiness.
Yes, absolutely. And if we look at Viktor Frankl and his wonderful work that he did, he says the same thing.
Search for Meaning?
Search for Meaning.
Yes.
And his after his observations of people and his own experience too in the concentration camps. And what he concluded was it was those people who had some meaning in their life, who had some hope, that were able to survive the concentration camps, were able to survive the experience. And those that didn't have meaning and gave up hope tended to perish and didn't make it through. And so he was trying to point out how important that was, and he continued that notion through all his psychotherapy afterwards and working with people.
So it behooves us to actually take the time to look at what is meaningful, what has meaning for us.
Yes, yes, that's completing the loop. That's the important point. We do need to take the time to reflect and to work it out and to really consider it, and also to get rid of, to siphon off the things that are no longer important for us, that we still hold in our life from an earlier time.
For example...
Oh, well, it may be even friendships that that we've carried for a long time but actually don't fulfill us anymore. They don't give us a return. They don't offer us anything, but they've just been there for a long time. So we might really consider, is this worthwhile? Is this what I really need in my life right now?
So if we look at friendships, like when we're with someone, we can notice, how does my energy feel?
Yes.
Am I feeling bored? Am I feeling frustrated? Am I feeling depressed?
Yes.
Is it pressing me down?
Yeah.
Or am I feeling uplifted and excited? So... is that what you're saying, that to look
yes.
at friendships in a new way?
Yes, to notice what your energy is like with people. And just because they've been in your life a long time doesn't mean that they need to continue to be there. If you feel that your energy is getting squashed by them or is getting damaged in some way, it is then possibly time to move on.
But you're not suggesting that we're unkind in any way.
No,
so
no,
it's not like, okay, I'm not going to be your friend anymore. It's not like that. That there's always kindness involved in these long-term friendships.
Yes, I'm very big on kindness, but we need to be kind to ourselves as well. And we need to, at this time of life, we need to look at life a little bit like we might look at cooking and the reduction process in cooking and getting that beautiful, rich gravy that we can get. And we have to be very careful the ingredients we use to get the gravy, that they're the best ingredients that we can use. And we need to just watch the whole process and watch how long, what we get rid of is very important, what we allow to evaporate, and what we find is peripheral.
So we're making new choices in our life, and much of that can't be the reduction of things. We're not going to be possibly wanting to acquire more things, get more acquisitions.
I think it's the opposite. It's a matter of getting rid of the peripheral and what is just weighty, just weight that we're carrying around. It's about lightening up and getting back to the essentials.
Right. Right. Let's go back a little bit. We started to really talk about death and dying and how, if we look at death and as we approach eldership, it's certainly in our forebrain to know that, hey, this is going to, we have less time ahead of us than we had behind us,
yes,
let's say.
That's right.
And if we look at that, if we turn away from that, if we like wanting to avoid even looking at that,
yeah.
I know that you say that can be a very weak stance. That's not a strong stance. It actually is a weak stance to look away rather than kind of embracing this reality.
Well, we all do what we can, what we find is the best for us at the time. So I don't know that I'd call it strong or weak. But I think what happens is we become aware of the continuum. We become aware that we don't have much time left. If we're in the third phase of life, and there are three phases, you know, we need to get a move on and do what needs to be done in life. And so the perspective suddenly is sharpened. And there's an awareness of time. There's an awareness of our ancestors that I think comes up, and also awareness of life within us and what life is going to be life beyond us into the future. And so that's another one of the frontiers that we face in elderhood that we don't really face in other life stages. Another one is becoming full grown, that elderhood is like our harvest time of life, when we have the fruits of our life available to offer to people, and also the seeds from the fruits to plant for the future.
So when you say fruits, are these like the talents and gifts that we have created and that we've enhanced through our lifetime, that they're coming, and not to just kind of hide them? I think of the biblical verse, you know, don't hide your gifts under a bushel.
Yes.
I don't remember the exact quote, but
yeah.
But it's like then to give them, as you say, plant them and water them and put them out, give those gifts.
Yes.
Not to be afraid of that.
Yes, absolutely. And I tie it in too with the notion of Joseph Campbell's ideas about the hero's journey. And the last phase of that is often not, doesn't have very much notice taken of it, but the last phase is return to the community. And that's what it's all about as an elder. We do have to find out what our gift is, our unique gift as a human being, and be able to offer that appropriately. And it's this notion of return to the community, which has a double meaning. And one is to actually go back to the community physically, but the other one is to give something back to the community, to return what we have taken from the community in our time, to return something back to the community.
So what do we do if as an elder or an elderly person, we're invisible in culture, where we're given short shrift in this youth idealized culture? How do we give that gift then if we're not even noticed when we're...
I know exactly what you mean. I'm sure that that many people who even in their 50s and over have experienced that. Part of the work that I'm doing is to help people feel that they can step up and be proud of being an elder, be proud of their age, be proud of having some wrinkles on their face, and accept being an elder with the dignity and the grace that the life stage bestows on them.
Now, I can think of certain cultures, let's say in indigenous cultures, throughout the world, are more cognizant of the value of the elders.
Yes.
And I know in China, they revere the elders
and look after them. Yes.
At least up until now, that's been the case. I don't know if it's shifting or not in China, but now in Western cultures, it hasn't been so prevalent.
I know. So here's the thing. I think if we can help individuals feel much better about being an elder, if we can help establish communities of elders to support that process, if we can cultivate intergenerational exchanges where there's mutual mentoring going on, and if we can help elders to make their contribution, their return to the community, and not feel that they're invisible and not feel that therefore they have to hide away and not do anything, but they can come forward, then I think we can make progress with this.
I can think of a project, and we've talked about this on New Dimensions, with Matthew Fox working with young people, and it's a warriorship project. I can't recall the name of it right now, but I'll get that in just one moment. And